Not being too bossy. A lot of people came up to me after the class. Some of them upset about Islam, which is perfectly understandable. But we could discuss the Mahdi and the end times. We could discuss jihad. We could discuss the implementation of Sharia law, the caliphate, slavery in Islam, anti-blasphemy laws, the second class citizenship of Christians and Jews, crucifixion in the Quran, etc., etc., etc. And we could do that all night long. So instead of doing that, can we just simply say that there are certain elements in the Quran that appear to be quite militant, quite radical, and that there are certain number of Muslims who are very willing and able to militantly, radically implement that ideology and move to the next step, which is, what can we do about it? Are we going to sit around and talk about how bad the Muslims are forever, or are we going to actually do something? Anyhow, so there's a great scene in the Civil War. Ulysses S. Grant has taken over the Army of the Potomac. He's just fought the terrible Battle of the Wilderness. There's a skirmish going on, and a bunch of officers are coming in with reports. One of them comes in and says, "Robert E. Lee, Robert E. Lee, he's going to do this. I know Robert E. Lee, he's going to do that." And Grant gets upset and says, "Bobby Lee this and Bobby Lee that. The way you're talking, you think Bobby Lee was going to do a double back somersault and land in the middle of our camp. I want you to stop talking about what Bobby Lee's doing to us and start talking about what we're going to do to Bobby Lee." So anyhow, is Islam a militant radical ideology? Under some circumstances, with some people, absolutely, unquestionably, yes. So how do you respond to a radical, militant, religious ideology? With a radical, militant ideology? Does anyone know of a radical, militant, religious ideology that might be able to stand up to Islam? The new church, maybe? So that's kind of where I'm coming from. Did anyone notice during the... So I think we're primarily in a religious, ideological, spiritual war. The writings say that all wars have an element of the spiritual in them. We don't know, quite understand them. But anyhow, people don't really want to go there. Our founding fathers went there. George Washington went there. The Confederation Congress went there. The Constitutional Congress went there. John Adams went there. James Madison went there. Abraham Lincoln went there. Jefferson Davis went there. They all admitted in their the terrible wars that they were involved in that they needed help, and that it was a spiritual conflict. They issued these days of humiliation, fasting, and prayers. So anyhow, I just don't think we've gotten to that point yet. It hasn't gotten bad enough yet. And if it does, maybe we'll finally get there. This guy named... Reza Aslan basically says that these Muslims are so militant that it's a war that we, in the West, we cannot win it. We cannot win on this ideological plane. We have to cede that plane, and we have to, you know, talk about diplomacy and this and that. And I just don't buy that. Our church is called the Militant, Church Militant. Anyhow, what, now we're getting off into the kind of the weeds and the deep water, and I'm going to get myself in trouble. But were there any concepts that you noticed during the presentation that might contribute to a militant religious ideology that could, like, how about in the section on Allah? What were some of the concepts? One that comes to mind? Any ideas?
God is
God is one. That's absolutely huge. I don't know the quote. There's a quote in Conjugal Love that basically says, focusing on one partner purifies, concentrates the love, and I have to believe that that's the same case with believing in one God. So I think that's a huge concept that we can tap into as a church and as individuals. The opposite to the Tawheed is shirk, idolatry, and anyhow, we've been reading the book of Revelation. Two of the seven churches in the book of Revelation are warned about idolatry. It's a fact. I think the new church is, I don't know if we have problems with idolatry, but we're being warned about it. John the Revelator has to be twice told by the angel when he falls down at his feet that see that you do it not. Worship God. I'm your fellow servant. That he needs to hear this twice. So I do think that the rejection of idolatry is an area that the new church really needs to look at. Get out your Taliban hammers and start smashing. Smash, smash, smash. It's fun. Or you can blow them up like the Buddha.
Did you bring any weapons with you, Ben?
I did not. But you know, really, these Taliban folks are doing what they're supposed to do. Jesus is the Son of God. A physical incarnation of the Savior God. That is just like such a radical concept. I mean, my Savior came down on earth and he is available. Anyhow, the writings say that the Son of God, the belief in the Son of God is the first truth of the church? Is that what it says, Lou?
First principle of faith.
So yeah, the physical incarnation. I believe in a physical, visible God. This is my own personal heresy, but the book of Revelation says that when Jesus Christ, when John saw Jesus Christ as the Son of Man, he fell at his feet, and the Lord put out his hand and touched him and raised him up. And to me, that says, and the writings, as far as I can tell, here's the quote, back it up. I think Jesus Christ is not just a visible God. If we approach him in the right way, he is a tangible God. And that, you're going to have to do a lot of convincing and show me a lot of quotes to show me that I'm wrong. So that's a very powerful concept. You may have noticed something in the list of Jesus as the greatest prophet. He's born of the Virgin Mary. He's this, he's that. He's a miracle worker. He's a preacher. He's a lawgiver. But towards the end, something's missing. The Muslims don't believe that Jesus Christ was martyred. They believe that someone else took his place on the cross and that he was raised alive to God. So this is another controversial subject, martyrdom in the new church. I believe that, and I think the writings say, that Jesus Christ is a martyr, and some of the articles I've read in new church publications, I question the idea that we shouldn't really look at this, that you know, we should really focus on the resurrection, and I'm sorry, I just, from what I've read, I don't quite buy it.
Can you define the concept of martyr, because there's sort of a colloquial, casual definition, and what exactly are you getting at?
Well, here's a quote from the writings. And they love not their, there's martyrdom, and then there's the new church definition of martyrdom, in my opinion. Here's what Apocalypse Reveals says, and they loved not their lives unto the death, It is to love the Lord above all else and the neighbor as oneself, and to wish to die rather than to turn away from these two loves. We, as new churchmen, are asked to die for the Lord and our neighbor. This is a radical concept. It means physically die. That's the way I interpret it.
So you think maybe our tendency is to want to go along, get along. And the thing about martyrdom is like, well, we don't want to be too extreme to really believe in our religion.
Yeah, there's the quote about the little children who raise up the Lord with strings and the angels don't focus on the death and the sepulcher, but I think there are other quotes that say something different. One of the interesting Greek concepts that I came across, speaking of martyrdom, is Jesus Christ, the faithful witness. That is martus in the Greek. In another quote from the word, it says, "And after that I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven." That word, the testimony, the Decalogue, is martyrion. So in the Ten Commandments and Jesus Christ, you have a joining in that one word. I don't know of any other word in the Bible, in the word, Old Testament or New Testament, where in one concept you have both pillars of the new church. I think that's interesting. I think it's worth investigating.
Ben?
Yeah.
You probably know more Muslims than anybody else in this room. Have you ever given them an inkling of what your beliefs are? For example, to say that the new church believes that Jesus Christ not only is the Son of God, but is God.
There's a great quote in the writings.
That wasn't my question.
Well, I'm answering your question.
Okay.
There's a great quote in the writings that it says some Mohammedans come to Swedenborg and ask to learn to be a part of this new church. And they are told to go study the Quran, which would strike terror into the heart of new church evangelists. But I think there's different ways of approaching them. My way of approaching them is to reinforce what they believe, stretch what they believe. Basically, the writings say that on this earth, Muslims are not. I talked to a Muslim once. He was a Druze Muslim. He's about as far out of the Muslim mainstream as you can get. We were talking about religion on and on and on. He tells me all these interesting things about his religion. And finally, I think, well, I'm going to try it on this guy. So I said, we believe that Jesus Christ is God. And he threw up his hands and he said, oh, this is not wise. How can the creator become the created? And that's a reasonable question. So you can discuss things with them, but you can't say the Lord God Jesus Christ reigns. Oh, okay, now I accept the new church. Anyhow, let me continue. Radical concepts. We have...
Ben, I'm just wondering, do you want to take more comments or questions? Or
let me pound through, and then I'm almost done. You can say whatever you want to say, and I'll shut up. So we have monotheism, radical monotheism. Not just monotheism, radical monotheism. We have radical rejection of idolatry. We have radical belief in the incarnation. We have martyrdom, which we don't need radical in front of that. And we have the Ten Commandments. The Joseph story, like the New Testament story, emphasizes conjugal love. I think what the writings say about polygamy and all these things, and what the writings say about problems with the Christian world, I think the battle in the Ten Commandments is marriage. And that sounds kind of strange. What does marriage have to do with ideological war? Well, the whole point of a war is to defend the women, defend the children, defend the home, defend the homeland, defend the motherland, defend the wife of the church, of the Lord. I mean, that's what war is all about. So of course it's about conjugal love. So anyhow, what I'm saying is, let's get radical. We're dealing with radicals. We need to get radical. Now I'm going to shut up, and you can say whatever you want to say. So, question. Hey.
It says in Heaven and Hell, in the third state, they teach them the heavenly doctrine, but according to the religion in which they were in.
Right.
Since they will use the Quran with Muslims and so on to introduce the heavenly doctrine. So what you said is true. I think it's very hard to bring a Muslim into the church if you try to introduce it by means of Christianity.
Right.
Because it says they detest Christians because they're given to adultery, hatred, quarreling, and drinking.
Right.
And so we, you know, if you come across as a Christian to a Muslim, you're sort of shutting them out because it's really hard for them. If you come across with the heavenly doctrine within their religion,
right.
I think that's how they do it in heaven. I think they managed to get quite a few Muslims becoming Christians there.
Yep.
Through their religion, because then they can get to that point where they see him as more than the greatest prophet.
Yeah, and Swedenborg does discuss things like good and truth, and he does discuss marriage with them, and they see the justice in it. So I think there are different ways of approaching them, and I'm not saying the way I do it is the best. Maybe it's the chicken's way out, but anyhow.
I think it's also important to realize that they're upset with the Christians because of what the Christians are doing.
Right.
The three gods, the adultery, the way they treat women, taking off their clothes,
right.
Things like that. I mean, they put so many clothes on a woman, you can hardly tell she's a woman. But the reverse is what we do. Right. And so the real thing is the Muslims aren't against the new church. They're against the fallen Christian world. So if we're going to get into a jihad or whatever, the question is, who are we going after?
Hollywood.
Right. Who's the enemy?
That's right.
Okay. I mean, to me, from my experience in Afghanistan, the Muslims were our best friends. They defeated the evil empire, you know. Radicals, militants, I love them, you know. I wish they were more militant.
You're talking about Russia at the time.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So, I mean, there are good militants and there are bad militants. On the subject of what you were talking about, we all know polygamy is a problem. The writings totally slam it. You can see it's a problem. I mean, a girl has a father who has a wife and a concubine, and they're on Facebook, and some of the friends are friends with the concubine, and some of them, so it's just a mess. I mean, a kid wants to go to college, but his dad is spending money on his concubine, so he can't afford to send his son to college. All these problems, you know. And then you get the whole problem of segregation where you get these horrific distortions of conjugal love because the men just don't see women. On the other hand, so that's a huge problem in Islam. On the flip side, modesty. Is Western society a modest society? Distinctive education for boys and girls. The Muslims are pretty strict about that. They believe men should be teaching boys, women should be teaching girls. Dating and chaperonage. I think we go too far one way, the Muslims go too far the other way. Chastity before marriage. Adultery. Divorce. The divorce rate, the two highest divorce rates in the Islamic world are Egypt and Turkey, 10%. I think ours is up around 40, 50, 60. No one knows because you get second marriages which have higher divorce rates, and you have people who aren't getting married at all, so it's completely messed up. And also protection of the unborn. That's a huge problem in Western society. So we have issues in the area of conjugal love that we absolutely have to work on. Anyhow, sorry.
Getting radical, you've asked us to get radical.
I mean, ultimately, the writings say that, am I allowed to say the writings say? Well, basically, the writings say that the church militant is all about shunning evils as sins. I think that's the bottom line. I do think we're in a spiritual war. The divine providence talks about it. What does a spiritual war look like? The divine providence says that fortune plays a part of it. Now, that sounds like an absolutely silly concept. There is no such thing as providence in war until you look at the Antietam campaign of the Civil War, the most, the turning point of the Civil War. And it all a lot of it hinged on this quirky missing order that the Union general was able to take advantage of. Robert E. Lee was not able to go where he wanted to go. So anyhow, there are examples of what the writings say. So I'm getting myself in trouble now. But
I'm guessing what you're telling us is that we should be militant about living our religion.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. The writings say if you wish to be led by divine providence, use prudence as a servant. How the heck do I do that? I don't know how to do that. But the writings say that shunning evils as sins and looking to the Lord is the prudence with which divine providence makes one. So to me, that is the bottom line. So yes, I would say the two areas, if you think we're in a spiritual war, would be fighting against idolatry and fighting against adultery. I think those are the two. And anyhow, that's where I think. So, more questions. Yeah.
I'm wondering, it sounds like what you're proposing is along a similar line to the concept of the mote and the beam, where if we're recognizing that there's this, we're Americans and there's this sort of East and West thing going on, that we would do well to not to give up, but to focus on fixing the poor spiritual state of the people's lives that we touch, the people around us, and take shunning evils a little more seriously here, and that I don't know, that might prepare us better if there was a situation where we needed to be fighting Muslims directly, we would have something more substantially, a more substantially moral position to be fighting from.
I guess my feeling is whether you see Muslims as friends or as enemies or as a combination of both, you want to deal with them from a position of strength. And I think by shunning evils as sins, you are, not that you're doing it, but that you are strengthening yourself. And I think that's just a given. So yeah, we need to be strong. I think it's a discipline. It's a discipline thing. So anyhow, I'm getting myself in deeper and deeper. I think I've gotten in as deep as I can possibly get, actually. So, but
in the spiritual war, the enemy is not a group of people in Syria or Iran or Iraq. The enemy is the evil spirits.
Right.
Who bother them just as much as they bother us. And so we have a common enemy.
Yeah.
It isn't people, it's the evil spirits.
And I think
we
that's...
We have to protect ourselves from people, but the
yeah.
real enemy is the evil spirits.
Yeah. What's the saying? We have seen the enemy and he is us.
Right.
Or we have met the enemy. And that sounds like a blame game thing. Or obviously, I mean, I think we should kill ISIS. Just kill them all. Kill them. Machine gun them. Bomb them. I don't care. Firebomb them. Why not? But I don't think we can the writings say that religion occupies the highest seat of the mind. And if we want to resolve, and it flows down into the other levels. So if we want to resolve that situation, if we're not going to deal with that religious level, we're not going to resolve the problem. So that's kind of, so anyhow.
Especially the level of religion in the way we live our lives.
Right, yeah.
Deal with the theology later. First, we got to clean up the mess.
Right.
A huge mess.
Walter Orthwein spoke to that New Church Life this last year. Everybody read that article. It was excellent about just that, that, you know, we are upset about the terrible state of the world and how the violence and the terrible destruction of marriage, this kind of thing. All we have to do is look to getting back to what the Lord tells us clearly in the Word. Look what the new church's problems with divorce and with, or basically with marriage not holding up what we should be in marriage in many cases, and in with these issues out there, homosexuality and that. Look at how it's being affected in the whole rest of the world. And I think that's because the new church isn't doing its job in terms just. With us, we're not.
Let's say the general church.
Right, right.
Right, the general.
The Lord's
I just mean, I mean the unorganized church.
I mean, two of the guys who bug me most on Islam, I won't mention their names. They're in the society here. They're probably in this room. I won't look at them. But they both said things that I thought were really intelligent. One of them said about Islam, I need to protect my family. And the other one said, I've been thinking about Islam and I've come to the conclusion that what I need to do is work on my marriage. And that sounds kind of weird, but I think it's really true.
That sounds like exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So
let's get radical.
Absolutely. And yeah, and that's the other thing. We don't radical. Radical in relation to marriage has some potential to be fun, I would think. I mean, I don't know. but, you know, if you get rid of the evil stuff, then you get the fun stuff. So I don't think it has to be, walking around in a hair shirt and whipping yourself on the back. You know, I would think there would be some pluses. So.
Just I'm thinking of what somebody living in Bernathan must think if you're somebody trying to get Kempton to be radical.
Well, I think they were calling, I think for a while after 9/11 they were calling Kempton jihadis, so
I'm sort of really trying to get us to be radical.
Right, right, I'm sorry, right.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, let's go let's go against yeah. Right.
It occurs to me that as you were proposing wiping out ISIS, with the horrible, like reveling in cruelty that they do and all the nasty stuff, from the standpoint of a people who is liberated from a horrible Muslim overlord, but they are also Muslim too, how much better to be liberated by people that you consider to be morally upstanding, and if not of the same religion, at least people who had a shared reverence for some of the important things that you hold high. So if you're going to be, I'm struck by some of the things that are celebrities have done in Muslim countries that are very disrespectful.
Right.
Just to kind of, I don't even know what the goal is besides thumbing your nose at somebody. And it would seem like if we have women that join our military and then we go and help liberate a Muslim country, that would be something that would be off-putting or concerning. I just like the idea of being respectful of the people you're trying to help by really considering the innocence and the innocent people and their religious ideals. Yeah. And I think that if we become less less bravado and more more charity, perhaps.
It seems like a focus on what you were talking about with you know, our own version of radicalism, as in you know, being very consistent in our adherence to spiritual principles. That also, in addition, provides a level of clarity that actually makes it more likely that we'll also take the bombs and machine guns route.
Right.
Because part of the problem we have is that we are de facto taking that route currently. The problem is that we're not really willing to admit it, to the extent that we falsify our intelligence reports to indicate that the threat level of ISIS is not what it actually is, or that what we're doing is actually being effective. So I think the end result of that, well, and in addition to that, we also fight everything by proxy. I think all sides would probably respect us more if we had the clarity to go in there and say, hey, these guys are wrong, and take care of business, instead of trying to set up all these different groups that are going to fight them. Because now it's gotten complicated to the point where we're intervening by supporting groups that go against al-Nusra and ISIS. Al-Nusra is the front for al-Qaeda in Syria. A lot of these guys are really not nice guys. So they just happen to be our not nice guys that are going to fight against al-Nusra. But al-Nusra also doesn't really like ISIS. So now Russia is intervening. So they're supporting the Syrian regime against al-Nusra and ISIS, but nobody really knows if any of the other groups that we're supporting are also going to be going against the Syrian regime. Well, some of them, in fact, are. So sometimes when we go and do things ourselves and we have the moral clarity to do it, we actually end up in a better position, because then we don't leave a power vacuum where all these other groups that we've supported can then come back and haunt us later.
I mean, I do think if you have a clear, you know, religious perspective, then yeah, it would allow you to do whatever it was that you needed to do on a lower level, or do it more clearly, or that would be my assumption.
Or justly,
right, yeah.
But I kind of think we didn't take the approach when confronted with Nazism and what was going on there, and say, well, you know, at this point in time, I think it's a given that we need to work on the spiritual aspect of it, but there was a lot of other stuff that we did that was in the physical realm that had to do with taking care of that particular evil. So I think there's a balance.
Yep. You definitely can't just stay up on the spiritual plane.
I think we can go the route of becoming just overly focused on the spiritual, and then
yep.
We're actually, in the end, not really focusing on the spiritual
yep.
when all's said and done.
Yeah, what the writings say, unless you have love, wisdom, and use, and if you don't put it down into the use, then you don't. It's just a fantasy, basically. So yeah, you can't kind of sit in your cave and meditate about not having any false gods or whatever. Although it would be kind of fun, I guess.
Well, you need people to do that.
Ben, I've heard people say, I haven't done any reading myself on it, but people quote, say that they see in the Quran things that propose violence.
Yep.
You know, death to the whatever and the non-believers and. I mean
definitely there's
that part of it.
Well, I mean, I was listening to a, I mean, in a sense, violence not all that bad compared to going to hell for all eternity, being burned for all eternity. This one Muslim hardcore American scholar basically says that all Jews and Christians are going to hell. So,
what?
So to me, that's worse than violence. And you can say the same thing about the Christian, you know. Anyhow, but yeah, from the quotes I read, there's certainly, yeah, there are some violent. So absolutely, I would think what Justin was saying, you have to fight that with violence as well. Absolutely.
Then didn't Muhammad led the initial conquest, right?
I think most, I don't know much at all about it. I got the impression that most of it happened after he died. I mean, he came into Mecca and he could have wiped the place out, but he let everyone live. I don't know how much conquest he actually...
I'm just wondering if the Quran has a bias toward Islam and conquest. I mean, you know, in a way that was being written while they were in battle, right?
I mean, there are a lot of quotes. There are some quotes, anyhow, that people in the West take out of context. Like, I was reading about the famous verse of the sword, slay them wherever you find them. Well, basically what happened was, if they'll take that out of context, okay, the Quran's saying kill all the infidels. Well, if you go back and look at the context, there had been a treaty between the Muslims and these infidel or polytheists. The polytheists had broken the treaty. They had, you know, I guess attacked the Muslims, and the Muslims warned them, you know, don't do this. It was a whole, there was like a 4-month holy season where you don't fight. Okay, we're not going to fight you during this season. But anyhow, so some of the stuff gets taken out of context, but it does, I don't know that much about it.
Well, I'm just saying it's like the Old Testament. Much of it was written when they were conquering, going to conquer Canaan, and you find that same kind of violent approach.
Kill everything that breathes.
The Old Testament,
right?
Because of the historic context. There's a lot more in spiritual sense. But.
And if you look at Christianity, you know, what's the quote? He who believes in the Son of Man will this, and he who doesn't will be damned. Well, I'm a lot more worried about being damned to eternal fire than I am about getting my throat cut. So,
once again, context.
Right.
It's not to say the damnation is this, that those who do evil don't want to see the light.
Oh, okay, okay.
So it's really, if they just kept reading there,
all right. Fair enough.
Just like you were saying about the story.
Right.
And we have, there are things in the writings, doesn't it say that witchcraft should be punishable by death?
Yeah.
Well, it goes through the laws in Exodus. It says some of them are
old. Some of them are old.
It actually simply says don't let a witch live. It didn't say she's
to death. Oh, okay. All right. So that, but there are places that it's not written in a flowery and exciting let's go out and kill people sort of way, but there's not a there's not a entirely pacifist or non-violent message throughout the writings. It does ultimately say you should be working with mercy and charity and loving your neighbor, but I don't think that it's if killing needs to be done, I don't think it's out and out prohibited.
I think in sort of war, for instance, it only backs up defensive wars.
Okay.
Although an offense can be in a defensive war, points out. And I think that that's somewhat where the Muslims see themselves defending themselves from the Western world, which is encroaching on them more and more. And so they make the attack to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're right, but that's, I think you'll see that.
I do get the impression that, I mean, that it's open season on... or potentially open season on idolaters. And if you're a Christian or a Jew or a Sabaean, whatever that is, then you're kind of a protected class as long as you play by the rules and do this and do that and don't get too big or anyhow.
Is that the people of the book?
Yeah.
Talks about the.
So I think the bottom line is, yeah, the right. I certainly wouldn't want to be a Christian living in Pakistan. There's a good chance you'd be attacked or murdered or raped or, you know, have a pogrom against you or whatever. So yeah.
Ben, I have a comment.
Sure.
I think one picture we get from the heavenly doctrine is that on some spiritual level, there is an inner compatibility amongst these various religions of the world.
Right.
There is a church specific, there is a church universal, and from that higher perspective, there ought to be ways we can figure out how to get along with each other. And if so, one thing to avoid, I think, is a blanket condemnation of the religion of Islam, to express that and to give the impression that that reflects an accurate new church concept of that religion. Because if you're around people of that religion and you express that, in a sense, you're trying to suffocate, like put a blanket over the thing that is their very life. Now, yes, there's good ones and bad ones, but we could say that about any religion. So to allow for a place where there can be like a spiritual communion, and then you got to kind of figure out the details of how you're going to get along with each other. And that requires the exercise of charity in various ways. So I think one thing I'm getting from the presentation is that it's very important to see and affirm that which is good. Good and truth are the neighbor. And that's true of people of various religions.
Well, the writings definitely say that I can love a Gentile more than a Christian if he lives a good life. I mean, that's what it says. What's that?
And the Christian doesn't.
Correct. And the writings also say, you know, if Christians are accepted ahead of Gentiles if they live a good life. So, we're not supposed to love Gentiles according to their religion, but we are allowed to love them according to their life. I mean, someone sent me an email a while back that's irritated me, and I made kind of a snarky comment. But I don't know that we really can, if there was a Christian nation, I don't know that we could live side by side with Mohammedans. You know, the writings seem to, the writings definitely say that they're completely separated in the other world.
So are the good and evil people.
Yep.
well, speaking to that, why is that? You went through this whole presentation, showed a lot of commonalities. But I mean, I just remember from school, there's a lot of emphasis on Mohammedans are separate and the worst of the non-Christian, blah, 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 blah. But it sounded like, except for a different revelator, they are Christian.
I mean, they have.
They're separate because they are political.
And they don't believe that Jesus Christ is one with the Father. Those are the two big things.
But don't they also say that adultery is really bad?
No.
For women.
It's the Christian world that are the worst adulterers.
No, I thought there was something about adultery in the.
Well, you get a double punishment if you're an adulterer. Murder.
But adultery to a Muslim is not the same as an adultery to a Christian.
Well, or adultery to a new churchman, too. I mean, there's three
sure.
different.
Well, actually, we would agree with the Christians if they would agree with the book of Matthew. But
well,
they
and we would agree more with the Muslims if they would agree with their Quran, too.
That's true.
So it does sound like if everything was in its purest phase, if all Christians were living their religion and new churchmen were living their religion and Jews were and the Muslims were, then if we still had a major disagreement, then we might have to really duke it out. But as it currently stands, it seems like it's quite possible you could do a lot of work just helping Muslims go to the Quran and live it better than they currently are, that appeal seems like it would bear a lot of fruit. In fact, it might be possible to support Muslim think tanks or something like that who are focused on trying to go back to some of the original non-militant non-externally feisty jihad and focus more on internal jihad. The thing I like about that is if Muslim scholars are protesting that Muslim religion and the Quran are more about this internal jihad, not this external fighting thing, you don't have to try and convince them otherwise. Encourage them on something that looks very much like regeneration. That seems like a...
Right.
You can poke people in the eye and say, no, I know that you really believe something else. And just like when we deal with Christians, if we have Christians who aren't particularly committed or don't really understand the three gods thing, or maybe they are having some, really they believe that you should live a good life and try and treat the neighbor nicely, you don't need to say, oh no, you're a Lutheran and I know you actually believe this. They've moved into more of a Gentile state. Don't reinforce the falsities of their organized faith. Help to encourage the good stuff. So it seems like if you have a holy book that many Muslims aren't following, and some Muslim scholars are saying, come on, are giving us good Muslims a bad name, we really also believe in all of this great stuff, then build that up and encourage it and help them spread it and say, hey, look, we're Christians and we think these Muslims have something going for them. We should support them, not identify them along with some pretty nasty people.
I do know some really absolutely wonderful Muslims. Really, they're kind, they're gentle, they're friendly, there's just something about them that is really, really pleasant. And they're well educated, they're soft spoken, they're gentlemanly, you know, they have good manners. And they're just wonderful people, generous, kind. So anyhow, then there are other Muslims who are horrible people. You know, they'll skin you alive if they get the chance, literally. I think it all boils down in the end to the individual, but. Okay.
Pakistani, I believe that she may have learned it. And it seems that there's a more gentle element to those people. One of the things that's been said about the Taliban, the more militant ones, are that these people are really ignorant of their other religion. They don't really understand it at all. And besides that, you have so many different factions in there. What's going on today does seem like it's really more of a obviously, the Muslim world is in turmoil. You have the Shias, against the Sufis, and you have the Sunnis. Sufis are kind of outside of it, being mystic, but it just seems like there's a turmoil in that world that's spilling over into our world, and we're getting involved in it because we have our own problems.
I've heard that it's the birthing pains of Islamic Reformation. I don't know if that's true or not, but... But I've seen some really beautiful things. Well, yeah, like a 10-year-old kid who recites the entire Quran. That's amazing. These people are geniuses, you know, to be able to do that. I could never do that. Or these women in Afghanistan, they will just make these most beautiful, spectacular embroidered shirts for their husbands. It's like, I mean, they're spectacular. It's a work of art, and you're just like, and the husbands are so proud to wear them. It's just like, And so you just see these things, and you see the horrible things. You know, some of these.
Oh, sorry. Just listening to all of this, it seems to me I keep hearing the Lord saying, be salt and light, be salt, be salt and light. And I know that those two things tend to kill bacteria and make everything around them clean. Salt's a preservative, it's, you know, enhances the life of foods, that sort of thing. And I just sensing sort of an element of shame that everybody, just by being human, has as part of being made of clay, and that we tend to project that onto others, that idea of you're pointing one finger at the other person, but there are three. You know, we need to tend to our own issues so that we can be salt and light. And just as in the Quran or any other faith, there's that universal theme somebody talked about, you know, love God and love your neighbor. You really had to get it down to those two things. And I seems to me there's not too much disagreement about those commands, or but the idea of being salt and light, it just, if you can do your own part, maybe those other folks who spoke about the, that were Muslim, but as human beings, they generated positive atmosphere around themselves, and it benefited everyone they touched. Maybe a little more of that would happen.
I just, let me get this idea out before I forget it. And I'm sorry that I'm not really answering. I don't feel like I'm answering any questions. I'm just. I think one thing that people don't think about is that, yes, Islam is bad. Guess what? Idolatry was a heck of a lot worse. These are not little Buddha statues that they were worshiping. You know what I'm saying? That, that there was horrific problems with marriage back in pre-Islamic idolatry. Women were property. Your wife, she's not your wife. You can trade her to another guy. You can do whatever you want with her. You can have female slaves. You have you're running out of cash. You bury your child out in the sand. This was a, so the idea that Islam is bad, it is bad. You take away Islam, you're going to get something even worse. Okay? So, well, if only we could get rid of Islam, everything would be great. No, it wouldn't. It would be one heck of a lot worse. Yeah. What was the cause of the Civil War? Love of dominion and love.
And the charity that we accept other religions doesn't come until we shun the evil of hatred and contempt.
Yeah.
Then charity comes. Doesn't come first.
Yeah.
So, yes, we have to deal with the physical world and the wars there, but I just love the fact that you put this in the context of what's really going on. There will be love of dominion that comes after Islam or Christianity or whatever it is. And I think it'll probably always, there will always be a fight.
And I do think Justin is right, if that's what he was saying, that you have to ultimate.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to ultimate. But anyhow, I'm glad one person said something positive about it.